tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Good morning. How you guys feeling? Awesome. Great to see you today. We are continuing our series entitled Movies, Modern Day Parables. And the truth of the matter is, not every one of you here loves a movie, and especially not every one of you here loves movies like I do, and that's okay. What we do have in common is that every single one of us loves a good story. We are captured by stories. And today, the greatest stories end up making their way into movies. And so for the last few weeks, what we've been doing is looking at the parable behind the movie. In Jesus' day, the scriptures teach us that whenever he taught to the crowds, he used a parable. And a parable is simply a story with a point. And so movies are our modern day parables. And for today's parable, we're going to look at a film that probably not a lot of you have seen. It was an independent film that came out through the Sundance Film Festival. And it got such a great response, it ended up being released to the public and became the biggest film ever to come out of Sundance. The film came out in 2013, and it's a little film, but if you've seen it, I am betting that you appreciate it. The film is entitled The Way, Way Back. Anyone have seen The Way, Way Back? 2.5 of you. One of you is embarrassed to admit it. You like barely put your hand up. But if you've seen it, there's a great chance that you appreciate the film. The Way, Way Back is a coming-of-age story of a 14-year-old teenager named Duncan. But what really made this film significant for me is watching it reminded me of my days as a youth pastor, specifically how someone can change a teenager's life when they intentionally invest in them. And the story of The Way, Way Back, Duncan is an awkwardly shy kid. He wants relationships, but yet he doesn't know how to form them. He doesn't know the words to say. He doesn't know how to say it. And he often finds himself retreating. Now, one thing that made this film significant was it was the first time that we'd seen on screen the actor Steve Carell's character play an unlikable character. Most of his career, he's been the funny man. He's been something that you at least laugh at or enjoy. And I really got to know Steve Carell through my all-time favorite TV show, The Office. Two of you like that. It's a great show. Amazing show. And his character, he's an idiot on The Office, but he's likable. And in this film, they took a chance because they created a character and put him as the star that it's not a likable character. He's not evil per se. He's just a jerk. And in the film, he plays Duncan's mom's new boyfriend. And the opening scene is going to give you everything you need to know about these two characters and their relationship. Check it out.
Duncan. Duncan. Duncan, are you sleeping?
No.
Let me ask you something. On a scale of 1 to 10, what do you think you are? Duncan, I'm asking you how you see yourself. Scale of 1 to 10.
I don't know.
I can't hear you, bud. You have to speak up.
I don't know.
What don't you know? How you see yourself? You don't have any opinion. I'm just asking. Pick any number. Scale of 1 to 10. Just shout it out. Just say a number.
A 6.
A what?
A 6.
I think you're a 3. You know why I think you're a 3? You know what would make me say that?
No.
You don't know? You have no idea?
No.
You gotta speak up, buddy.
No!
Well, since I've been dating your mom, I don't see you putting yourself out there, bud. Meeting kids your own age? And from what your mom tells me, you just seem content to hang around her apartment? Is that a fair assessment? You're just happy to not do anything? Because that's, to me, that is a 3. But the good news, I'm here to tell you, is that there are going to be plenty of kids, plenty of opportunities for you to take advantage of at my beach house this summer. It's a big summer for all of us, really. You, your mom, me, Steph. One day, we could become a family. So what do you say? Let's try to get that score up, huh? Aim higher than a 3? That sound good? You up for that, buddy?
So Duncan is headed to a beach house with his mom's new boyfriend, and it's supposed to be the summer of his life, but pretty quickly we realize and find out that it's not a very good summer at all. Duncan wants to connect, specifically he wants to connect with his mom. He is losing the connection with her because she has a new boyfriend, and he longs to spend some time with her, but she's so wrapped up in her own world, she doesn't have time for him, and so Duncan finds himself leaving the adults, and we see in this film that the adults in his family, they feel like they have friends, but they're very dysfunctional. They have their own issues, and Duncan doesn't want to have anything to do with it, and so he often finds himself escaping. He finds in the shed next to his house a girl's bicycle, and he ends up getting the girl's bicycle, and whenever there's drama or whenever he just doesn't want to be around the family, he takes off, and he doesn't have any idea where he's going to go. He just rides his bike to get away. And one day, he ends up randomly running into a human who ends up changing the course of his life. And that sets up our next scene. Check it out.
Lemonade all set.
Mind standing to the side? I'm getting your reflection on the screen there.
Sorry.
I wouldn't normally care, but I'm having the game of my life. I'm on that cherry level.
But that's the first level.
Yeah, I got one man left, so like I said, it's the game of my life.
You like Pac-Man?
What? It's a classic. Not at all the bells and whistles, my man. There's too much going on. See, my mistake is that I get greedy going for all the ghosts and fruits that are just clearing pallets.
You know there's a pattern, right?
Oh. Tell me you're one of those guys. It takes all the challenge out of it. Anybody can learn a pattern.
Owen, we gotta go. Come on, lunch hour's over.
Well, so much for the game of my life.
We still have one more man left.
Nah, I've yet to see the second board. Gives me something to look forward to.
The board's always the same.
Well, there's that. Thank you. Now I can die. Here, get in here.
No,
it's all
I...
you. Come on. But listen, it's still my quarter, so if you end up getting a high score, I don't want to see... What's your name?
Duncan.
I don't want to see that up on the screen.
Oh, they only let you use 3 letters.
Wow! This is up to the imagination with you, huh, kid? Oh, and, hey, no pattern on my quarter. Cut your own path.
This chance relationship, at the time, Duncan doesn't know how it's going to impact him, but it ends up making a huge impact in his life, and it's specifically because of the dysfunction in his family at the beach house. Duncan finds himself trying to find places to escape, and he notices that Owen works at a water park. And the water park's not close, but it's within riding bike distance. And so one day when Duncan wants to just get away from the drama and get away from his family, he gets on the bike and he just rides to the water park. He doesn't have a ticket and he doesn't work there. He just sits in the water park. And it's as if the filmmakers are saying, this is a kid that wants to be around people but just doesn't know how to connect. He longs to be where people are. He's not going to be by himself. He is sitting around thousands of people and yet he is alone. And because of their encounter at Pac-Man, Owen notices him. And this is the part where the film started to capture me, because as a youth pastor, it was one of my goals to connect with the kids that just didn't connect, that didn't belong. And I would look out and I would see people that had made the attempt and effort to come to church, but you could just tell they were a little awkward, they didn't quite fit in, they didn't know their place. And those were the kids that I wanted to reach out to, because I want to show them that they matter and they have importance. And in this film, Owen sees Duncan and he ends up showing him around the water park. And that's the first mile. Noticing people who don't fit in and noticing when they're sad or just off, that's the first mile. But the second mile is actually investing in them. And in the second scene, we see that Owen goes a step further than just saying hi and showing him around the water park. Owen actually invests in him. And it's at this point that Duncan's life starts to change. Check it out.
Hey, what's up, cowboy? You want to ride?
No, thanks. I got my bike.
Where are you staying?
Over by the beach on Hampton.
That's far. People drive like idiots on the Fourth. Why don't you throw your bike in the back?
No, you don't have to.
Come on.
Yeah?
Yeah.
No, it's too much trouble.
Duncan, we got to start having faster conversations. Throw your bike in the back. I'll help you out, but I got my hands on the wheel. Give me a ride. I think that's enough. Where'd you get that? The Princess Collection? Hey, easy, easy. Nice teamwork. Oof. I'm exhausted.
Thanks for the ride.
Hey, thanks for the memories. Hey, Evel Knievel. You're probably busy or not interested, but I need somebody to be a floater at the park, you know, do some odd jobs, clean up some vomit. What do you think?
Definitely. Awesome, yeah. I mean, if it's too much trouble, you totally don't have to, but if you need someone, I mean...
Duncan.
Yes.
There you go. Tomorrow, 9 a.m.
So Duncan ends up taking a job at the water park, and it starts to change his life, specifically because Owen believes in him. And Owen continues to put him in situations that stretch him and challenge him. And in one scene that is absolutely hilarious, Owen tells Duncan that he has to tell some breakdancers that they have to stop breakdancing at the water park. And they end up forcing him to breakdance, and it ends up getting him the nickname Poppin' Lock. And for the rest of the film, they call him Poppin' Lock around the water park. And it's an amazingly brilliant scene. What we see, though, is that Duncan's self-confidence starts to grow as he's at the water park. But for some reason, he keeps that a private part of his life, and he never tells his mom. So he has this dysfunction at home, and then he has this amazing life at the water park. And one night, when the relational aspect at home just seems to kind of collapse and break down to the worst part in the movie, he runs away and he flees. It's late at night, and so he doesn't have a place to go, and so he goes to the place that makes him happy. It's the water park. Well, the water park's been closed for hours, so he doesn't have a plan. He doesn't know what he's going to do. He just wants to get there. He wants to be at a place that he feels safe. And he rides his bike to the water park, and at the water park, he finds that he didn't have to sneak in, he didn't have to climb the fence, that the owner, Owen, is actually throwing a party with some of the employees. And Duncan ends up going into this party, and he's supposed to stay just for a couple hours and go home. But he has an amazing time, and he ends up staying all throughout the night. And the very next morning, he is up at the top of a water park, and the owner of the water park, who you just met, Owen, he sees him, and he could have just said, hey, you know, that's just a kid. Kids are moody. Teenagers are moody. I'm just going to let him be. But he doesn't. He intentionally goes in to see what's going on in his life, and that sets up our next scene. Check it out.
You were right. We do sell coffee. I said you could hang out for a little bit, but sunrise the next day is where I have to draw the line. You gotta go home.
I wish you could stay here forever.
Well, you're gonna love the winters. They're pretty spectacular. Painting houses till it gets too cold, bar backing at some dive, talking to inanimate objects.
I'm serious.
Yeah, so am I. There's a whole world out there for you, Duncan. Don't settle. Not yet.
I don't have anywhere else to go.
Yeah? I bet that's not true.
This is the only place I'm happy.
What's going on?
I hate him.
Who?
Trent. My mom's boyfriend. He said it was a 3. He asked me what I thought I was on a scale of 1 to 10. He called me a 3. Who says that to somebody?
Somebody who doesn't know you.
even want to have to answer. I shouldn't have to answer.
Listen to me. That's about him. That's all about him. That's got nothing to do with you.
Yeah, how do you know?
Because I know, okay? Don't worry about how I know. My dad was the same way. That's why I don't like patterns or rules. That's why you can't buy into that. You gotta go your own way. And you, my friend, are going your own way.
Probably because I've seen the film, but I get choked up watching that scene because he notices him and he asks the right questions and he hears about Duncan's pain. And instead of just dismissing it, he tries to encourage him and he relates to him and he lets him know that that's not about you, that the reason he called you a three, it has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with him, and he encourages him. Well, Duncan ends up going home, and when he gets home, he finds that the summer is over, and it's not over because it's the end of the summer. It's over because his mom and her new boyfriend have decided to call the vacation short, and they tell him he doesn't have a choice. They've packed up. The drama's so bad that they're just going to go home and just call it a day, and he begs out to them, no, please, let's stay. I just want to stay. Let me finish out the summer, but they don't want to have anything to do with it. They don't want to listen to him, and they are just done. Well, the issue is he never informed them that he was working at this water park. He never informed them that it was changing his life. And so at this point, he can't tell them, hey, I need to go say goodbye to my friends, because they don't even know about his friends. And so he ends up just getting into the back of the station wagon. It's the way, way back of the station wagon. And he's riding out of town thinking that he doesn't get a chance to say goodbye to this water park and to the people who have changed his life. But they decide to stop to get gas. And when they stop to get gas, he can see the water park in the distance. And without telling anyone, he busts out the back of the station wagon and just runs towards the water park. Well, his mom and her boyfriend and his boyfriend's daughter, they're all like, what is going on here? And they chase after Owen into the water park. And at this point, he doesn't just want to say goodbye. He wants to leave his mark on the place that's changed his life. And so he attempts to do something that they said was impossible. And it's an amazing scene. And his mom gets to see it. And it's like this moment where she's like, is this my kid? Like, you can just see it in her eyes. She's so confused. She's only seen her son as this shy, awkward person who doesn't know how to connect with people. And now she sees him do something. And the whole park has the attention. And it's this amazing scene. But at the end, he knows he has to say goodbye because they're leaving. And he goes to say his goodbyes. And this is where Steve Carell's character wants to step in. He's had enough of this. He's on a time schedule. He wants to get home. And that sets up our final scene. Check it out.
Are we done?
Oh, you must be Trent. I'm Owen. I'm a good friend of the three.
Come on, let's go. I'll be in the car.
Hey, Mom, can you give us a minute? Mom?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
Bye, Roddy.
Bob and Locke.
Bye, Caitlin.
Take care, Duncan. We're gonna miss you.
Yes, I'm still here. Bye.
Goodbye, Lewis.
Bye.
Bye, Lewis.
Well. Faster conversations.
You go out of the world. Thank you for everything.
But in between, it's you and me.
If you've ever been the awkward kid who had someone believe in you, you'll love this movie. And if you've ever worked with teenagers or kids, and you've seen the potential in someone when they didn't see it in themselves, you'll love this film. It is rated PG-13, and so there are a few swears, and the adults in this movie make some really stupid life choices that I would not recommend doing, especially if you're trying to follow Jesus. But overall, it's a decently clean film for a Hollywood movie, but it is rated PG-13 in case you do want to watch it, so just make sure you're careful watching it and do some research on it. But the movie, The Way, Way Back, the opening scene is actually based off one of the creators of the film's real life. He says that conversation is actually verbatim to something that happened to him. And when asked about the film, the purpose of the film, what is the parable of the film, the makers went on to say this: The Way, Way Back is about the connections we have with people, whether it's for a split second, for a summer, or for the period that they're married to your mother, and how they give you something even if you didn't realize it at the time. That every relationship that we have leaves a mark on us. And sometimes those marks are negative. And sometimes the negative marks are things that cause us to chase after things for the rest of our lives. They didn't know how they impacted us, but we just can't shake what they said. And sometimes those marks are positive and they change us for the better. But every relationship that you have has an opportunity to leave a mark on you. And that's what The Way, Way Back is about. It is the parable of people and the marks that they leave. And ultimately is the parable about friendship and just how powerful friendship can be. Not friendship because you have a lot of things in common, not friendship because you're even the same age, but friendship that is intentional, that someone looked out and saw a need and said, I'm going to do something. I'm going to make a difference. We're going to connect because you're important in the world. The amazing thing is that all of us were born for connection. We were born and we were wired for friendship. And I want to give you the main idea. If you're taking notes through our app, YouVersion that we use, or even on a piece of paper, the main idea today is simply this: healthy friendships are chosen on purpose. Healthy friendships are chosen on purpose. One thing that psychology and science and even religious communities agree upon is that human beings are wired for community. Now, this is significant because science and the religious community don't often agree. Most of the time, they disagree about everything, but they are in unanimous agreement about this, that human beings are wired. We are born to be created to be in relationship. Now, the reason why we have this need for relationship, the science community would say it's a different reason than the religious community, but for us as Christians, for those that are trying to follow after God, we understand that the reason why we have a need for relationships is actually because it's how God has created us. We see this in the very beginning of the Bible. If you're not familiar with the Bible, if you're new to the church scene, the very first book of the Bible is the book of Genesis, and it's the book of beginnings. It tells us how everything came to be. And it tells us that God created everything. And after he created something, he would say the same phrase over and over again: it is good. And it is not a prideful statement. It's a statement of like, you've had a really hard day at work and you've worked your best and you've worked your hardest. And you look at what you've completed and you say, I feel good about that. I accomplished something. And so God looks at the creation. He creates the stars and he says, it's good. He creates the sun. He says, it's good. He creates the water and the trees and he says, it's good. And then he creates man. And he creates man, and the scriptures kind of divert from the rest of the formula. Every other time, God creates something and says it's good. But this time, he creates man. And instead of saying anything, he puts the man in the garden, and he has a relationship with him. And the man can walk and talk with God, and they have this amazing like one-on-one relationship. And then God does something that I find very interesting. God parades in front of the man all of the animals. And he tells them, today's adventure is you get to name the animals. What an amazing day. Like, can you imagine? You're the first human being ever. Everything is new to you. Like, you see a tree, you're like, wow, what is that? And God's like, it's a tree. And like, you see the sky and you're like, oh, that's so amazing. What is that? That's the sky. And then you see the sun. You're like, oh, it's so bright. Oh, it hurts my eyes. What is that? That's the sun. And God gets to tell him what everything is. But when it comes to the animals, God says to him, hey, your adventure today, you get to name the animals. So the first man is sitting out there and the animals parade in front of him. Porcupine. Honey badger. Elephant. Spiny lump sucker. It's a real animal. Google it. Imagine how amazing this would be. Like, whatever's coming to his mind, he's just naming. He's saying, that's what I'm thinking of. And he names the creatures. But after he sees and names all the creatures, the scriptures tell us this exact phrase. It says that there was no suitable helper for the man. And I think that it was very intentional. That what God did was he created the animals and he created everything and he created the man and he put the animals in front. And it was as if to say, the man, oh, I like these things. I like these animals. These are nice. These are great creatures. Some of them might be my pets. Some of them may taste good. Mmm, bacon. He's like looking out and appreciating the animals. But as he sees the animals, he sees that there's not a single animal that looks just like him. And at this point in Scripture, God diverts from the normal program of saying his creation is good. In fact, it's the very first time that God looks at his creation and says it's not good. He looks at the man and he says, it is not good for man to be alone. And I look at this and I say, well, he's not alone. He has a one-on-one relationship with God. He talks to God and God talks back. And not only that, now he has all the animals. Like, he's got man's best friend there. He's got animals all around. He's not alone, but yet God looks at his creation and says, it is not good. So the man falls asleep, and the next morning he wakes up, and when he wakes up, he sees that God has created a female. And this is different than the other animals, because this female kind of looks like him. Different, but similar. And his response, it's amazing. You can actually like read it. His response when he looks at this new creature, he says, whoa, man, I will name her Woman. Whoa, man, she stole my heart and my cat. She is beautiful. She's amazing. Woman. And at that point, we see that humans were wired. We were birthed. We were born to be in relationship. But all throughout the rest of the scriptures, this idea of being in community is a theme. It is carried out throughout. And it's not just the theme of men and women. It's the theme of friendship. It's a theme of being a part of something where you feel like you belong, that God literally intentionally made you so that you need other people. You were made to have friends and to be a friend. I want to show you this in our scripture today because I think it's incredibly important. And at Next Level, we honor the text. We do that by standing to our feet. So if you would stand to your feet, read it nice and loud. We're going to read Proverbs 12:26. At the top of our lungs, we're going to say, the righteous choose their friends carefully, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. Now that we've read the text, let's go to God in prayer. God, we just thank you for this day, and we thank you that you still speak today. We ask that, God, you would speak to our hearts right now. We ask that you would speak in the still small voice that you so often do, and you help us to hear you. God, we ask you to remove the distractions from our mind and from this room so we could clearly hear what you have to say. And God, would you give us the courage to obey you, even when it's difficult. Thank you for what you're going to say to us. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. So we are wired to live in friendship, to have friendship. And the verse that we just read, it comes from the Proverbs. And it starts off by saying, the righteous. Now, whenever you're reading the scriptures, you got to ask yourself some questions. Because in order to get the most out of it, you got to be curious. And if you're not curious, you're not going to get anything out of the scriptures. And so when you say the righteous, you need to ask yourself, who in the wide world of sports are the righteous? Because this is addressed to them. This isn't addressed to everyone. It's not addressed to some people. It is only addressed to the righteous. And so that's the only one that this verse is focusing on. So who are the righteous? Great question. The righteous, it comes from, our understanding of it comes from the Hebrew word for righteous. And the Hebrew word for righteous is the word tzaddik. The T is silent. Tzaddik. And that's probably not how you say it, but if you say anything with confidence, people will believe you. So, tzaddik. And the word literally means just, lawful, or correct. The word righteous, the Hebrew word righteous, it means correct. But even more than that, there's some understanding behind the word righteous. The Hebrew people were a nomadic people. They lived in tribes. They lived in villages. And it was a very primitive society compared to today. And so most of them, at times, they would live in tents or they would live in a city, but it was like had a walled city. And in order to get certain supplies, you would have to follow a certain path that they created themselves. And the idea of righteous was that there is a path that leads to what we need, and there are other paths that lead to our destruction. And so when they needed water, if water dried up in their little area that they were living in, they would have to walk on the path to the river or the closest body of water to gather water. There were certain places where they would go hunting. There were certain places where they did things. And whatever they needed, they couldn't just go to the store. They couldn't hop in the car. They had to literally pave a path. And the understanding was that if you walk on the right path, you are going the right way. You are going the correct way. It is righteous. But if you walk off the path, you are opening up your life for destruction, because off of the path could lead you to be attacked by a wild animal, or off the path could lead you to be attacked by a surrounding neighbor who's not very friendly, who's not welcoming us. And so the idea is that you want to stay on the path that our village, that our people have carved out. Stick to the path. And the idea of a righteous person is a person who is walking on the path that leads to God. And not all paths lead to God. So a righteous person would walk on the path to God, and when someone would leave the path, they literally would say that person is lost. They've wandered from the path. And so this idea of the righteous person, it's talking to people who are trying to follow God. It's talking to people who are walking on the pathway and saying, it's not that I don't know if I believe in God or not. This is talking to people who would say, yes, I believe in God, and I want to follow after Him. If that's you, you would be considered righteous. The people that are walking after God, you are a righteous person. It says the righteous choose their friends carefully. The righteous choose their friends carefully. Now, why is this so important? Well, because the righteous understand that we are born for community. And community is not a one-on-one relationship with God. Community is formed walking on the righteous path with other people so that you can worship God. You were created to be in community with friends. The righteous choose their friends carefully. But look at what it says next. It says, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. Now, why is this important? Well, it's important because there's a path that leads to water. There's a path that leads to the place where we worship. There's a path that leads to the place where we go hunting. There's all these paths that we've made. And if we go off the path, it leads to danger. And so there's a righteous path that leads to God. And if I walk on the path, I'm going to find God and I'm going to be known by God. But if I'm not careful, because I'm built for friendship, I'll get around people who don't want to walk on the same path as I do. And because I need friendship, I'll actually be influenced by them, and I'll follow them to become lost, and will divert from the path of righteous. That literally you are wired for friendship. You are wired to be in relationship, and it's such a strong bond that you will leave the right path to go on the wrong path if you're not careful with who you're in community with. So it means that there are some people who you say, okay, you can be an acquaintance to me, but we can't be close friends because you're not choosing the same thing, or you're influencing me in a way that tempts me to do things that aren't honoring to God. It does not mean that we don't have friends that don't believe in God. It doesn't mean that we don't have friends that are perfect. What it means is that you're intentional about the people you allow to influence you. And if someone comes in your life and they influence you away from God, you've got to say, they're not my best friend. Because the righteous choose who they're going to be friends with. The righteous say, I need people in my life who are going to help inspire me to walk on the path towards God. And if you have someone in your life that inspires you to walk on the path towards God, that is a godly friendship. That should be someone in your circle. If you have someone in your life and you would say, hey, we're good friends, but they're constantly leading you away from the path, the wise person says, the righteous person says, hey, you can't influence me anymore. We can't be in the same. I like you. We can still be Facebook friends. I'm not going to block you or hide you. But no, I can't go to that place with you, because when I go with you, I get in trouble and I'm trying to walk on a different path. The righteous choose their friends. The righteous choose their friends. Why is this so important? Well, because some of you, it's not that you have friends or not. You say, yeah, I've got lots of friends, but you've got friends in low places where the whiskey drowns and the beer chases your blues away. And you say, I'll be okay. You say, I'm not big on social graces. I'm just going to slip on down to the oasis because I got friends in low places. And if that's you, you are filling the void that God has for you to find friendship, to find community. But if the friends don't lead you to the righteous path of God, you're in danger. Because you were wired for community, you were made for community, but a righteous person says, I'm going to choose to be around people that inspire me to walk on the path to God. Why is this so important? Well, I love what the author Jim Rohn says. He says, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. This is so important because you will become like the people you spend time with. And you are wired to be connected. And so if you're connected to people, you will become like them. And if you're connected to people that aren't walking with God, if you're connected to people that are constantly negative and complaining, you will become like them. Because you are so wired to be in community. You've got to choose your friends. Now, most of us in here, according to statistics, don't have great close friends. We feel like we do because we're surrounded by people. We all, at least most of us, have Facebook. We have Facebook friends, or you have Instagram followers, or you have work acquaintances, or you have neighbors. You see people. And so you would say, yes, I have friends. I have people that I know. But we are living in something that is called crowded isolation. And crowded isolation is that we're in a day and age where we have broken away from the tribes, we've broken away from the nomadic living, and now we're experiencing lots of different tribes and lots of different people. We know so many people, but not very many people know us. And so if you were asked the question, hey, are you lonely? The vast majority of us would say, no, I'm not lonely. I'm surrounded by people. I've got people in my house. I've got people in my neighborhood. I work with people. But statistics and surveys show that Americans are dying by loneliness. And it's not a matter of do you know people. It is do people know the real you. And a friend is someone that you share life with, that you do things with, that knows when something's not right in your life. And if you've got acquaintances who you hide certain areas of your life, that's not a deep friendship. A friendship is someone who sees everything inside of you, that celebrates the good and the bad. And you are wired, you were created not just to get married one day, you were created and wired to have deep friendships, meaningful relationships. And there's two reasons why most of us in America don't have very good friendships. The very first reason is because of time. In our culture, we prioritize everything but relationships. And especially once you get out of the teenage years and you get out of school, what we prioritize is a job and money and a house. And we make decisions all the time based off what's going to move our career. And no one thinks about how it's going to impact our friends. In our mind, we just think, oh, I'll make new friends. According to surveys, 17% of Americans pack up and leave and move every single year to chase a job. And we never think how it impacts us relationally. And some of us can't help but move. We're in the military, and so that's understandable. But you need to understand that you are wired for more than making a paycheck. You are wired to be in a relationship. And the only way that happens is when you intentionally say, I choose you. The friendships do matter. What we've done, though, is we've chosen everything else in our world. And it's caused us to feel so busy when it comes to friendship. You know what we all say? I just don't have time. And friendship becomes something extra. It becomes a burden. It becomes, I have to do this. But what it's doing is it's causing us to not feel the effects of loneliness in our life. We feel like we have friends, and yet we're dying because of loneliness. There's a second reason, though, that most Americans don't have really, really close friends. And the second reason is because of unhealthy expectations. In America, unhealthy expectations are killing us. It's this expectation that we want people to be something specific. And if they don't match that, they're not good anymore. And so what we do in our culture is it's not enough just to say, hey, do I have someone who loves God and loves me? Great, we're friends, I'm committed to you. We now say, I need someone that loves God, who never makes mistakes, who invites me to everything, who is perfect, who makes me feel a certain way, who doesn't deal with drama. We have this whole list of what a friend looks like. And when they don't match that, we say, oh, I can't be your friend. But if you have someone in your life who loves you and loves God, you better hold on to that relationship because you are wired for friendship. You are created for friendship. God has wired you and destined you and put in you a desire to be connected. Crowded isolation is leading to this awful epidemic in our country where we don't know that we're lonely, but yet the effects of loneliness are weighing on us massively. The General Social Survey found that the number of Americans with no close friends has tripled since 1985. Zero is the most common number of confidence reported by almost a quarter of those surveyed. Likewise, the average number of Americans feel they can talk to about important matters has fallen from 3 to 2. It is an epidemic in our culture. The vast majority of adults say, I have zero friends. I have zero confidants. Once you take out family, I have no one that I can go to with my problems. And loneliness, the idea of loneliness, when a human being feels lonely, it causes all sorts of health issues in their life. Loneliness raises your blood pressure. Loneliness causes high cholesterol. Loneliness leads to obesity. loneliness has caused heart disease, sleep problems, digestive problems, and weight gain. So many of our issues, we don't think it's because of loneliness because we say, I've got a million friends, I got people all around me, but our body is screaming out, you feel alone because no one knows you. It's crowded isolation. In fact, some research has proven that loneliness leads to 26% of people that are lonely die sooner than those who have a connected relationship. 26% die sooner. We are in desperate need of meaningful relationships, yet we are too busy and too pulled to maintain them. I love what one therapist says. Therapist Will Miller says, if you talk to any therapist today, the problem we see mostly are mood disorders, depression, anxiety, loneliness, and social detachment. As blessed as we are as Americans, as prosperous as we are, there's all this depression. So where is it coming from? I'm convinced it's rooted in the loss of refrigerator rights relationships. Well, he wrote a book, and the idea of refrigerator rights is that having someone that's not related to you, that they have the right to your refrigerator. They can come in your house, and they can open your fridge and make a sandwich without asking permission. That they belong in your house, even though you're not related to them. And we have lost that in America. And because we've lost that, what we've seen is depression has gone through the roof. Now, you've got to ask yourself a question. Why? What does depression have to do with loneliness? It has to do with everything. That God has actually wired us to respond to loneliness with depression. Now, why is that? Well, because we were created to be in community. And the way that the community works is that you are so closely connected to people that when depression hits in, depression doesn't cause you to say, hey, I need help. Depression causes you to retreat and to want to sleep and want to get away. And what depression does is depression is a signal to your community that something is wrong. God has given us the gift of depression to literally tell the people that are in our lives, I need to reach out. They need me right now. But we are so isolated, no one knows when we're depressed. And loneliness and isolation is literally killing us today. It's causing all sorts of health problems. It's causing all sorts of disease. And it's causing depression. And we think the answer to our depression is a pill or a counselor. And the answer to our depression is meaningful relationships. That your body is shutting down because you feel lonely. Anytime you don't feel accepted or rejected, anytime you feel like you do not belong, the body starts to respond chemically because you were made, God made you for community. And so in your life, if you go through a period of sadness or depression, or you start gaining weight, or you start feeling high stress, maybe there's a symptom out there with your job or the move or some pressure, or maybe it's because you're trying to do life without your friends. Depression is the body's way of saying, come rescue me. I need help and I can't do it on my own. And yet when we get depressed, no one notices because we're so isolated. Friendships are about quality and expectations. And healthy friendships are chosen on purpose. So if you can relate, if anything resonates in you, if you would say, yeah, I would say I'm dealing with crowded isolation, that I know a lot of people, but I don't really know anyone very well, and no one really knows me, and yeah, I experience some of those symptoms, and yeah, sometimes I do get sad and depressed, and I think it's because of X, Y, and Z, but maybe it is because of this loneliness. If that's you today, what you need to know is that the righteous choose their friends. And what we do in our culture is we wait for people to choose us. And sometimes you have to be the person that looks out and sees a Duncan sitting at a water park, and he's all alone. Sometimes you have to be the person that picks up the phone and calls. Sometimes you have to be the one that sends a text and says, I haven't seen you in a while. And sometimes you have to pay attention to something other than yourself and notice when someone hasn't been to church in a few weeks. And you have to message them. And sometimes when you're feeling lonely and you say, hey, it's Friday and I want to do something fun, instead of waiting for your friends to call, you got to choose someone. And you say, well, what if they say no? Find someone else. If they don't have time for you, they're not a good friend. Find people that need you and you need them, and you've got to choose. You've got to prioritize and make time for it. The Hebrew calendar, the way that they worked it was around the sun, that they would work from sunup to sundown. And when the sun went down, it was time for family time. And it was time for friendship. Well, we've messed all that up. We're so busy at nighttime, we're catching up with work, we're catching up with email, we're jumping on social media, trying to be connected to people we never see. We don't have time for our family. We're running around like crazy, throwing fast food at them through a slingshot, hopefully they're eating it. We have no time for anything. And you are wired for community, but if you don't prioritize it, it's not going to happen. So what if once a week you built in time to invite someone over to the house for dinner? And what if just once a week you said to yourself, hey, I'm built for relationships, so I'm going to intentionally invite someone to my life. What if the next time you had to do something that you don't love to do, instead of saying, oh, this is awful, I have to do it by myself, what if you invited someone to do it with you? So many memories are made through the adventures of doing everyday normal stuff with friends. Here's the main idea: healthy friendships are chosen on purpose, and here's the application. Choose someone who is walking the righteous road and prioritize that friendship this week. Choose someone who's walking the righteous road and prioritize that friendship this week. This does not mean that you can just force someone to be your friend. If you go to someone and say, hey, I chose you, that was the part of the sermon, I listened to that. If they're like, no, you didn't, then you're not friends. You choose someone who chooses you back. That's a friendship. Okay? So choose someone who's walking the righteous path. Hang out with them. And if they hang out with you back, if they invest back, if they help build you up, if they help inspire you, that's a friendship. Pour into that person. Hold on to that person and prioritize them, because we are dying because of our loneliness. Choose someone who's walking the righteous road and prioritize that friendship this week. Let's pray. God, we thank you so much for this day, and we thank you for the fact that you open our eyes to see how we're really wired and how we're supposed to be. We thank you, God, that you give us scriptures to teach us what we're supposed to do, because on our own, we don't walk the righteous path. We thank you, God, that you've provided the answer to our needs, that you have provided it through community, through friendship, through relationships. And God, the easy part is to figure out what we need. The hard part is to obey you. And so, God, would you help us to be intentional about investing in other people? Would you help us to pick up the phone? Would you help us to send out a text? Would you help us to pour into other people? Would you help us to be the Owens who look out and see the Duncans and say you matter? Would you help us to create places where people find home, even when it's not their home? Would you do something in us so that we can change the world? In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.